We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For today's podcast, we're going to do something special. We're just going to step aside and play the DVD, North London Derby, April 2024, How Spurs Almost Made It a Game. This is the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast. My name is Elliot Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yank Gunner. Yeah, that's going to be in the Spurs shop soon. We almost made it a game. North London Derby, April 2024. We nearly wrecked their title challenge. Here's the weird thing. You don't get any points for losing by one goal. In fact, you get no points and you get a loss for that. And so Arsenal have not only won the North London Derby and confirmed Champions League qualification for another season, we have welcomed back a dear friend who was here last year and is here again. And his name is St. Totteringham. It is St. Totteringham's Day yesterday. So today we are celebrating St. Totteringham's Day. I, for one, enjoy this holiday. I lamented its absence for several years. It is now back. It is the day, of course, when Tottenham can no longer finish above Arsenal, which is the natural order of things. And consecutive London derbies won by Arsenal in stylish fashion. I do have to laugh at the people who are, you know, being somewhat critical of how the game ended or we made it close. Because, like, weren't these the same people saying we bored them to sleep when we played at the Etihad? Like, which way do you want it? Do you want us to make it interesting and exciting for you, or do you want us to make it boring? The good news is we can play both ways. We can get a result both ways, and we did beat Tottenham Hotspur 3-2. Made it just fun enough that we all got a pulse check before the end of the game, and we'll probably talk about how we experienced that. We got some sensational individual performances in this game as well that I'm sure we will celebrate. And we still sit top of the table, albeit with a game in hand, and we look for City to slip up, and that's really where we are in the world right now. So we're going to discuss all of that. I will let you know that the fundraiser has wrapped up. I want to thank everybody. In under a month, you raised over £314,000 for the child refugees in the Zaatari camp. It is an astonishing figure. It is one that reflects the generosity and solidarity of this community in an extraordinary way. We did let the random number generator do its thing, and Carter won the ticket for the VIP seat at the Bournemouth game. So he will be there with those of you who got a ticket from the auction. All those emails will go out later today, so you can look for that. But thank you again, everyone. It's the most special time of year, not just because Arsenal are good at winning football matches, but also because we get to do this phenomenal act of philanthropy. Thanks to all of you. And thanks to Andrew at Arscast, of course, for supporting that effort as well. And Talia Williamson for coming on and having to chat with us about her experience. So that's all we got to say today. Of course, if you want to see the raw emotion, the instant reaction, I think it's one of the most fun ones we've done of the season. That one is over on the Patreon. But for now, you are going to get the dulcet tones of Clive in your ears. His name is Clive. You can find him on Twitter at ClivePFC. Hello, Clive.
Hello, hello.
And of course, the man who will tell you which derby in 1923 this is exactly like. His name is Tim. You can find him on Twitter at Stillmanator. Hello, Tim.
Hello there.
Which was it, 23 or 24 that this was more like?
Well, it's funny you say that. My great-grandfather was at the first ever North London Derby in 1922, and he was a Spurs fan.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
True, yeah.
And that's why
He's not around with us anymore. He died cause of death.
My family was an Arsenal Tottenham mix, but I've kind of sorted that out with people I've, shall we say, brought into the family in recent years.
Your secret is safe with me and the people listening to this podcast, so maybe not safe at all. But that's okay. We forgive you. You've more than made up for it with your years of service to the proper North London team. So, guys, this was a hell of a day that was very, very funny for a while, and then not so funny, and then terrifying, and then very fun and funny again. And there are so many little moments to tease out of this. There's Ben White messing with Vicario's gloves. There's Declan Rice giving it back to Weird Al Yankovic. There's Saka giving it back to the people who were giving him shit in the corner. I mean, there's Ange Postecoglou saying he doesn't think he needs a set piece coach when he's literally just been undone by two set pieces, and it's been an issue all season long. There's a lot of fun stuff in here. I want to start, I think, with two aspects of this, two emotional aspects, the sort of fun and excitement of winning, and then the raw horror and terror of the last 10 minutes of the game, because I think those are the two things most fundamental in people's minds. And then we can get to the Kai Havertz of it, the Saka of it, the David Raya of it, and so on and so forth. So I'll start with you, Tim. You had a bit of a weird experience of the day, so I want to get your take. First of all, just what it means to you to beat Spurs away, consecutive seasons now, winning the away derby, but what we had to go through to get there in the end, the emotional journey of the day.
Yeah, so I was at the women's game, which kicked off at 12:30. So like the first 20 minutes of the North London derby kind of overlap with the last 20 minutes of that. And for me, when this happens, I prefer a perfect overlap, because I prefer, if I'm not there and I'm not watching, I prefer to completely disengage from the men's game. So for example, Man City away, there was more or less a perfect overlap with the Conti Cup final, so I didn't have to experience it emotionally. Which I prefer, but this time I kind of, so the first 20 minutes I kind of had my eye on, the first half basically, I was kind of had my eye on Twitter periodically. So the way I experienced it was every time Arsenal scored, I knew about it, and I knew that Tottenham's goal had been disallowed, so I just got the big moments. Because one of the things I did, I didn't really want to look at my timeline too much, because I knew everyone would be mega anxious. Mm. And it would be like, oh my God, he's given the ball away. And you get all those like cryptic tweets that would be like, FFS, exclamation mark. And you'd be like, what's happened? And it turns out like someone's like, I don't know, given the ball away 80 yards from goal or something. It's a bit like listening on the radio. You kind of don't want that. So I was just following the Arsenal Twitter feed, because that just gives you goal disallowed, substitution, like just the pertinent kind of moments. So when I went into the post-match press conference, Jonas Eidevall, it was halftime, 3-0. I was feeling very, very chirpy, you know, got to write up my post-match during halftime and all of that. The second half, I followed a lot more closely. And Spurs made, and basically from 45 to 60 minutes, my timeline was not very busy, which is exactly what I wanted. That to me was a fantastic indication that nothing was happening. And that was exactly what I wanted. And then the first goal went in just as I got a cab back to Liverpool Station. Tried not to follow it too much, got to Liverpool Station, and I got the kind of notification, Spurs VAR check, looks like Spurs got a penalty. It scored. And at that point, I was in Liverpool Lime Street Station, and I was like, right, I'm going to go in a certain supermarket brand that is in Liverpool Lime Street Station. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to buy my beers for the journey home. I'm going to go to the gents. I had like 50 minutes to my train. So I was like, I'm going to go in the Wetherspoons. I'm going to order a pint. And hopefully by the time I've done all of that, it'll all be over. And that will take roughly 7-8 minutes, which it did. And I got to about 94 minutes. And I was like, right, okay, I'm going to check. And I could see like on the Arsenal feed, it was like, you know, 6 minutes stoppage time posted 4 minutes ago. So the last 2 minutes I experienced exclusively through my timeline. Oh. So stuff like Spurs have a corner, Vicario's coming up, and I'm sitting there nursing my pint with my head in my hands, like going, oh my God, I don't know if it was better or worse that I couldn't see it. And the first tweet I saw, this is where you have to be really grateful for journalists who are in the ground, because they will tweet straight away. They'll tweet before Arsenal and Tottenham, because they don't have to do a graphic and stuff like that. It would just be like, full time, Arsenal have won. It's actually Miguel Delaney who was the first one, who just said, full-time, Arsenal have won, look at the relief on the coaching staff's faces. And I was just sat there and, well, you can see my immediate tweet afterwards because it's done numbers, as they say, which is my immediate emotional reaction is that I am furious that Arsenal put me through that. So that's how I experienced the afternoon. But I got to watch the game back this morning without all of that. And that was actually... it's actually quite a nice way to experience it. And to be honest, I think even in the first half, if I'd been in the stadium, I think I'd have been going through the ringer as well. And we can get on to that. But yeah. An emotional game, shall we say.
Yeah. And I love Mikel's quote. This is, you don't always get honesty from managers, but when you do, it's fun. On how much faith he has in his players. I do. But on the last few minutes, I was doubting them, to be fair. And then brackets, laughs. Like, you know, you were all of us. There was definitely a lot of emotion that we went through. And Clive, that's the thing. I mean, I've actually seen a lot of frustration in the Arsenal fan base in the reaction. Not a ton, but some. And I get it, right? At 3-0, you have dreams of a humiliating win on their on their pitch, right? Like 4-0, 5-0. And in fact, Saka has a great chance to make it 4-0. And I get that. And that's great. But like one of the things about going 3-0 up is it means you can concede two goals and win. Like these games are always mental. I am old enough to remember the 4-4 at Newcastle. And like you can feel it. You can feel it when a flashpoint happens in a game and it's going to change the momentum and things are going to get hairy. And when Raya made that mistake, you could feel this was going to be a bumpy landing. But we had given ourselves the cushion. We had done what we needed. And I think people lose sight of something else. This is a Spurs team that had 15 days to prepare for this game. Right now, Spurs are the pressingest team in the Premier League, okay? So they come with intensity, they come with energy, they press the crap out of you, and they had 15 days to be rested and ready for it. We're coming off the back of playing one of the top four pressingest teams in Chelsea, playing the top pressingest team in the league. And by the way, the fifth pressingest team in the league is Bournemouth. They're up next, okay? We've been playing every 3 days, and so I think it was inevitable that over the course of this game, energy level advantage to Spurs was going to have an impact. And in fact, in the pod we did before this game, I said, I really think we need to be in a position to try to win it early and make changes in the second half because of that energy advantage. And so I get being frustrated we didn't humiliate them. But because we built up that lead, we were able to ride out the really tricky end of the game. And what makes this a harder game to analyze is I think we were better in the second half than the first half. Bar the two mistakes, the Raya error and the Rice penalty. So I get the frustration that we didn't humiliate them, but I love the resilience we showed. It is still a win on their patch to secure our position above them. So did you connect to the frustration and the misery that, you know, I know Andrew, you know, Arsblog was saying like he aged, he's now 205 years old. He's the world's oldest man. I think we all felt that. Did you at any point have the urge to turn the game off and just not watch the last 10 minutes?
No, turning the game off is not something I do. I
thought about it, I won't lie.
I suppose the frustration comes from we had a statement win, but we didn't make the statement we could have made. Mm. Right? Mm. And that's probably the frustration. So because I was thinking we could really do these proper. And because... I will say Spurs are an interesting team. They play in waves. So when they attack, they attack in waves. They have attacking periods where they look irresistible. But when they attack, they don't think about defense. They just attack. They just run around. I mean, Romero's getting a lot of praise today. I don't know if you've seen his average position sort of chart. He's literally everywhere. And no one can tell me that's part of the tactics. That's a player going off-piste, doing what he likes. Right? And they do this on occasions, but when you get enough people doing that, that structure can be picked off. And I thought the way we played the game was really quite good. Yes, we got more than we probably deserved in the first half, but you know, I can take it. If they're going to be stupid and not concentrate on the parts, you know, all parts of the game, particularly on set pieces, and not put someone in front of a goalkeeper, I mean, what are you doing for 2 weeks? You're not watching? Have you not met Ben White? Have you not seen any of our previous games? So there are things that you need to do. You can't just focus on your passing patterns and your ability to build up the pitch and leaving two defenders at the back and hopefully going to cope. That's what you're going to do. You're never going to get to the top level of the game because you have to respect all different game states and different scenarios, and they just don't. They're trying to build something else there. So yes, I did stay connected to the game. I was sort of, I was disappointed. Obviously, we all went through it, didn't we? We all were in agony, and it wasn't the fact that they were dangerous, because I watched it again today, and you watched the last 10 minutes, and basically nothing happened. A couple of corners, a couple of free kicks that we dealt with, and it was just the feeling of, could you imagine if they got this result out of nothing? They would have this over us for 20 years. Now, the fact you mentioned Newcastle, man, I can go back to the 4-4 at home at Spurs. I was literally making dinner arrangements at 4-2, and suddenly it's 4-3, and then they go 4-4, and that one still haunts me. That's why I never go against the football gods, because you can't trust them. They can turn against you at any moment. So that's what I didn't want. I didn't want that for everybody. This team has got something. To have that label on top of last year's unfair label would have been one label I just didn't want for everyone, for everybody, because this team is contractually signed up. They're not going anywhere, and I didn't want that luggage around any of them, really, and let alone us fighting off our mates in the pub, right? That would be even worse. So yeah, Elliot, I stayed connected, and we won. And I don't want to say we got away with it, but we won. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't think we got away with it. I think we, you know, I'll quote Ange Postecoglou, because why not, right? What he said about us is that we manage the here's exactly, credit to Arsenal, they're there now. They're a team that does deal with the details well, and we don't. And that's it with football, because you can do a lot of things right in a game, but if you don't get the fine details right, you can find yourself with 72% possession in the first half and 3-0 down. And that's exactly where they found themselves. And I think, you know, one thing we should just mention quickly, Tim, I don't want to do a big section on it because it may not make for fun podcasting, but I think it's important, is Nicolas Jover. I mean, you know, the impact he's had on our season and the impact he has in this game, two great set piece goals. And, you know, Andrew was asked, you know, about getting himself his own set piece coach. He said, if I thought fixing defensive set pieces was the answer to us bridging the gap, then I'd put all my time and effort into that. But that's not where we're at. And then says Arsenal handle the details well and Spurs don't. Like, those are two contradictory comments, because every detail matters. He's saying, oh, if I thought that detail was the difference, I'd put my energy into that. No, Ange, all the details matter. So you get a coach who has time and energy to put his focus into those details if you don't feel you can. And I think what sets Mikel apart and sets Arsenal apart from Tottenham, so many things, obviously, but is that we have focused on all the details, not just some of them. He loves to play that attacking, stylish football that he thinks is going to get him plaudits, but he's finding out, as we've learned in the past, by the way, that if you don't mind the other details, you're going to get caught. And he absolutely did. So maybe a word, Tim, for Jover, on the impact he's had to our season. Set pieces haven't popped up a ton lately, but they've been huge this season and they've made the difference in the derby.
100%. This, for me, is one of the absolute principal reasons of why Arteta and his staff have taken us to where they have. Because he respects all sides of the game. He respects it all. He respects the shithousing. He respects what you have to do off the ball. You watch Arsenal, we attack with 11 and we defend with 11. And this is not, and look, this became, let's not be silly about this. This became an issue in the late Wenger era, where we cherry picked the parts of the game we liked. Mm-hmm. And we started perhaps a little bit, as a fan base, as well as a club, to kind of, I don't want to say demonize, that's too strong a word, but to talk down on other parts of the game. This Arsenal, and I think maybe that's a lot of Arteta's upbringing, like he played under David Moyes for a long time. And David Moyes is a really good coach at what he does, by the way. He's still a Premier League manager after 25 years. And I know people have a go at David Moyes. You don't stay in the Premier League for 20 odd years if you're a joker, right? Because he's got that side of the game, right? And Arteta played under him for a long, long time. And I think that's very valuable. And I say that completely unironically. But also, it's probably a symptom of just competing with Man City as well. You can't cherry pick. You need every point and every goal you can get your grubby little mitts on,
yep.
and set pieces. Like, I'd love to see the count. I mean, obviously, like, football doesn't really work like this because goals change games and everything. I should go away and do the calculation of how many points set pieces have won us this season, mm-hmm. because, like, without them, we'd be behind Liverpool. Probably, we'd we'd probably be back in the pack a little bit. I think we'd still be better than like Villa and Spurs, but we would not be in a title race with three games to go without them. And I love having a manager who doesn't consider that beneath him. Love having a manager who sees the value in having a six foot four guy at centre forward. And did you notice what Raya did every time he got the ball? Clip over to Havertz for the flick on to Saka. And again, like, not above that, not too ideological, not too up his own arse to say, yep, sometimes you need to post up to the big man. Not all the time, because it can be inefficient, but sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need a long throw. Sometimes you need a corner. And let's grab every marginal gain and ring it for all it's worth. And Arsenal respect both sides of the game. And if I were a Tottenham fan, and very thankfully I'm not, I'd be questioning Postecoglou on that, like, because they don't have a set piece coach. Like, even if you don't think that's your strength, get someone in whose strength it is. Like, what are you mm-hmm. doing? Like, long may it continue as far as I'm concerned, but for me, he gives off that kind of I'm going to coach the parts of the game I like. And you look at the number of goals Tottenham have conceded this season. They've played Newcastle and Arsenal in their last two games. They've shipped seven. We didn't have to do very much to score three goals against them. And we were picking on Ben Davis a little bit as well. And like, you've got to respect that side of the game. And I'm just going to quote one of my best friends who I go to away games with. Sometimes little things just stick in your head. And this is from years ago after Arsenal lost to West Brom at home. If you remember this game, we went 3-0 down and we got two late goals to make it 3-2, but we lost 3-2 and Almunia did his elbow and had a shocker. But anyway, he texts me after that game and this is obviously in the midst of our trophy drought, and he just said, "No defendi, no trophy." And that phrase stuck in my head forevermore, and it's absolutely right. And that I think enormous credit to Arteta for not being an ideologue, for not being too up his own arse to appreciate like some of these marginal gains that you don't make the centre of your game, but you need them sometimes. You need to win games in different ways. And, you know, Arsenal are proving more and more they can win every type of game. And that's because Arsenal respect every side and every phase of the game.
Yeah, we have a lot of different faces we can show, and we showed them both in this game, and it is a really interesting one. I think we should start to get into the details of it a bit, but I definitely think that you have to find marginal gains. You just have to, especially, look, when you're going after Manchester City, who can outspend anybody and have two star players for every position, if you just try to go toe-to-toe with them building a team that's better than them, odds are you won't get there. Odds are you won't get there anyway. But if you can find marginal gains, right? If you can find places where there are gaps, better at throw-ins, better at corners, right? Better at free kicks. Those are free areas of improvement just from coaching. And we've taken them. And that was the difference in the derby.
And
so
you look at as well, Elliot, a club like Brentford. Brentford have gone up like three leagues. By this is too simplistic, but by looking at marginal gains, data, set pieces, they've gone from League One to mid-table Premier League pretty much overnight. And how have they done it? Not because they've spent loads of money on players, but because they've looked for those marginal gains. It can take you a long way.
Yeah, exactly. And Clive, it's interesting because the first half of this game is unlike most games we play in that we had none of the ball. We just had none of the ball. And they came out doing what they do, pressing extremely aggressively. And we got pushed back a bit. The funny thing is, if you could ask me how will we play at Old Trafford, I would pick the first half of the derby. I hope we do that at Old Trafford, because that is a team that can't score from possession and can't cover counters. And so, you know, we kind of did a little jujitsu on Spurs in the first half, but I'm curious how you reconcile the fact that we found ourselves up so early and ultimately up three goals in a half where we had so little of the ball. Very, very different way for us to take on the game, but one that proved very effective, unlike the second half.
Yeah, well, Spurs are—they're dumb, really, aren't they? They're just dumb. They don't do their work, and so, you know, there was a moment before the first goal when we started to get a little bit of pressure, and we obviously forced the corner. But I think it was there was a disallowed goal, wasn't it? Very early on for us, that the linesman flag went up. If you're looking for momentum swings, that was the one. Then we had a couple of near moments after that, and then we hit the corner, and the corner goes, and it's goal. And for a Spurs fan now, we've done pretty well. They've had 3-4 minutes of proper play, and we're one down, right? So, and I was quite pleased to see the little huddle we used to do, the Shaka huddle, I want to call it, we were doing last year. We started to do that again, and I thought, yeah, man, I love this, because I want to see the focus. In this game, it means so much to all of us. Everything we can do that tells me we're focused makes me feel happy. And so, and the feeling I had watching the game earlier, I've learned now watching this team that being off the ball is not the worst thing in the world if that's what we're forced to do, because we know what to do when we're off the ball.
Yeah.
We know where to stand. We know what to do. Everyone knows their roles. They get into them really early. They know it to the half yard, mate. They literally stand to the half yard. And so why are we worried? They're not worried. They've been coached. They've been coached what to do off the ball and coached what to do, how to expand and who expands the game and what their first 2-3 passes are going to be and how we're going to create time to get into our offensive shape. So I don't go into a game watching it and say, I want to see this game. If I don't see this game, I see it as a negative. Sometimes you're forced into a game. Have you got the solutions to get you to where you want to be on the pitch? And we have those solutions now. I know it cost us in the day, but with a goalkeeper who can ping it anywhere he likes so a striker can get it. We have two forward players that can hold the ball like centre-forwards in Saka and Havertz. In this game, we use Odegaard to maybe run on beyond. If you check his average position now, it's the highest of all, which is never normally the case, right? He's normally part of our build-up or last pass. So it shows you we thought about their pressing ability, Elliot, and went over the top when we had to make sure that eventually they were kept running backwards. But Spurs not like us. They just run back. They don't run back to the point of danger. They just run back. And they still leave spaces. They just don't. You know, to the other side of Tim's speech just now, they just don't do the detail. They don't do the details in defensive transitions. They don't do the details on restarts. They just want to attack as they want to attack. And they want to get down the side. They want to cross it across to an offside forward to tap it in. That's what they want to do. They want to do that. You know, when they can't get that, they struggle. They struggle, right? So I was quite comfortable in our shape. We probably went in with one more goal than we deserved, if we're being magnanimous and objective.
But why, mate, do that?
I don't know if you're going to do goals either, but I thought...
Yeah, I do, of course.
Yeah, I thought the first goal, we take it, right? They're stupid, we take it. Second goal, that was the one for me. That was execution under pressure, right? The way we exited out, the firmness of pass from Rice into Saka knowing where our forwards were, facing the play out to the left, and then disappearing. And he's thinking, hold on, no one's running with me. They've all gone over to go and get Havertz. I mean, that's just, Van de Ven leaves the space where he was covering, goes across, because he's like got his cape on. I've got to defend everything at the back here. Hold on, mate, there's a kid here just going to run down your wing. But he's not my man, he's Davis's man. So Davis now is out of position trying to recover into his line. And Saka's first touch, mate, is a dream. And he's thinking, he can see goal straight away. Goal, here comes a goal. I've got to do my details right now. And he does a little shimmy to shake him to say, I'm going to go on my weak foot. Davis buys it, brings it back inside. And the touch to create the angle to bring it back onto his left foot. We had a good camera angle watching on TV, and we all know that's going in. It's just a pass into the bottom corner, and it's just a thing of beauty. And that's the difference. That's how much we've grown. Doing things under pressure, in the right moment, in the hottest atmosphere, in our rival's back garden. Mate, that's beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, and by the way, the two things about that goal, the Kai Havertz pass obviously is brilliant. You know, there aren't a lot of number nines or players playing as number nine that can drop in like that, protect the ball, and then deliver that pass. Saka's first touch is insane. It's like a dribble. I can't even explain it. He just kills all the bounce off it, nice and flat, right out in front of him so he doesn't have to break stride. And then with the shot, I said this in this interaction, but I think it bears repeating. Everybody knows Saka's going to cut on his left and shoot with his left, everyone except Ben Davies, I guess. But like, the thing with Saka is he sweeps his leg in a way that's really quick and before you think he's taking the shot. He doesn't have that backlip that says, I'm shaping to shoot. And so it's going past the defenders and the keeper before they are in position to block it. I think he's really, really clever with how he gets that shot off. And, you know, it's like Iron Robin. Everybody knew he was going to cut on his left, but somehow he had a way of disguising it, still getting it off and curling it past the keeper. There's so much quality there between Kai and Saka. Clive?
Yeah, I've been talking to some young strikers about the last shot and the last thing you do. The way these guys do it now, it's almost like a pass. You almost think like, you got to think of it almost like a firm pass. And that's where you get the control. Us amateurs, we try to bang that and shoot. And that's where you lose control. That's where you miss the target. These guys, they calm down at that moment when everyone else is hot. They calm down and he just clips that into the corner. It's like a pass. It's barely a shot. Mm. You know, I think that's what these guys can do. That's what the pros can do. I've got such admiration for them. I know it's their job and they do it all the time in training. It's all repetition, etc. But mate, if we go 2-2 and we lose this title, everyone's going to be looking back at that moment thinking he normally scores that. And so the pressure is there and the ramifications are serious and they still can produce under pressure.
And those two players, let's be honest, they're the players of the game for me, Saka and Havertz. And I want to get into their performances a little bit more, but before we do that, I want to touch on one kind of, not negative, but I just one thing. One of the reasons I think we struggled to control the game a little bit, Tim, is that one of the players we rely on to be that sure-footed match controller who drops in, gets the ball, distributes confidently, doesn't lose it, is Martin Odegaard. And he has been, since the new year, as good as any player, not just in the league, in the world. I think he's dragging us through this run. And not dragging, I mean, we've had a lot of good players, but he's been right there at the top. He could be man of the match of just about every game. This one, he wasn't on it. And to give you a sense of just how not on it he was, he played 88 minutes. He completed just 18 passes in this game at 69%. Had some uncharacteristically dangerous giveaways, lost the ball a little bit cheaply. Look, you have to be really careful not to speculate about medical stuff. So I'll just say I've seen chat about the way he was crunched in the box and he went down holding the side of his head. And he was down for a bit, and he did look pretty out of it. And he played in a way that I think most of us do not associate with him, just in terms of his lack of precision in his game. Again, no speculation, just a thing that was noticed, and I do wonder if it influenced his game. But even setting it aside, Tim, that was the one thing that I think you could really see not working in our game was Odegaard, usually the outlet around pressure, the outlet around, you know, going from defensive third to attacking third. He was not able to be as involved and precise and effective as usual. And I do think that contributed to us having so little of the ball and not really beating the Spurs pressure as much as we would have liked.
Yeah. I think that's all pretty fair. I think there's a few things going on here. I think first of all, the last couple of games, Odegaard's played much higher. I talked against Chelsea, that really, really worked. I talked a little bit about after the Chelsea game, that kind of midfield box shape. And I really think that's one of the reasons Partey's been brought in, because he really bears right and Rice really likes to bear left. And so you've got like these, again, like coaches always talk about when you have the ball, you want the pitch to be as big as possible. When you don't have it, you want it to be as small as possible. And actually what Arsenal's midfield has done in the last two games, they're a box when we don't have the ball. And when we have it, it fans out into a diamond. So Rice goes one side, Odegaard goes the other, and Havertz comes to like the tip of that diamond. So I do think maybe we lost him a little bit in this game just because he was being asked to play higher. But at the same time, I think you're right, because you look at, you know, the Havertz goal that's disallowed. You look at the Odegaard pass to Havertz. in the build-up to that. Like, honestly, if that goal would have been allowed, we'd be talking again about one of the assists of the season, like the little kind of shift of feet and the way he finds that pass with the angle his body's at is sensational. And I do
kind of become a textbook Odegaard pass. I feel like that's his sort of like shift. Trademark on the slant, shifts his body, plays it across his body back the other way.
Yeah, it's not like a full feint, but it's a half feint. That kind of just like shifting. Van Persie used to do it up front quite a lot when he got the ball with his back to goal. He'd wait for the ball to roll onto his boot, and then he'd just like quickly just like flip his boot out a little bit and get it out of his feet. And like Odegaard does that on the ball as well. So I do think that's kind of right. And we did lose a bit of control. I do think Spurs pressed us well in the first half. And I think if we're honest, that Van de Ven goal that's disallowed, that's a real sliding doors moment, because at the point that comes, it felt like it was coming. Right. Yeah. And again, I looked at my Twitter timeline, and when that went in, the amount of times that was coming came up on my timeline. And I watched it back this morning, even devoid of the emotion, it was like Spurs really actually reacted okay to going 1-0 down. I think they were kind of on top before that, but we did hold them at arm's length. I think they really came on to us after the first goal. If that had been allowed, I think it could have been quite a different game. And I do think in this analysis, we probably have to be honest and say that some of the marginals went our way. And I don't mean incorrectly necessarily. It's just like that Van de Ven offside, that's like literally if Gabriel's arse was a bit bigger, he's onside. Like,
can I say one thing about that? Because I have some frustration about the focus on that. So like, I think the bigger sliding doors moment is Son missing a very, very big chance, unmarked center of the box from ball over the top where he skies it. Because the thing with the Van de Ven one being offside is, sure, he's slightly unlucky to be offside, but he's also slightly lucky the ball gets there at all. It's a nothing shot, a hopeful shot that's blocked and falls right to him. Right to him.
Like, I do think Spurs were building to that, though.
Sure. But I guess like my difference versus the Sun miss, that's a really good pass over the top. They beat our defense. This is, he's fortunate for where the ball goes to him, and then he's slightly unfortunate to be offside. So my attitude is like, you know, they cancel each other out. You know, the ball fell on an offside guy. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, true. But if you build a lot of pressure, one of those will go for, and they were. Course,
yes.
They were building pressure at that point. But I think like, but the way maybe it didn't work for Odegaard in this game, where it really did against Chelsea, that play, like Michael Cox described it as a number 10 partnership, right, between Havertz and Odegaard. Really worked, probably actually worked better for Odegaard than Havertz against Chelsea, but Havertz gets two goals, so who cares? Whereas in this game, that massively worked both for Havertz and for Arsenal. That shows in the second goal, right? Havertz has dropped right deep, and every time Tottenham had the ball, that's one of the reasons we look so defensively secure, because Havertz, he plays as a striker when we have the ball, but off the ball, he's like a midfielder. Like, we play with no striker, basically. We play with 11 behind the ball, and that's quite unusual. But then Havertz actually has an underrated level of athleticism that then allows him to either join the attack, or if not, very happy for one of the wide players, Saka or Trossard, to go and, you know, go and fill that space, whether it's central or not. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the wide players have been scoring goals in the last couple of games. And a lot of that, I think, is a little bit of Tomiyasu as well, kind of coming in and taking their wide man for a walk. And at the same time, Havertz, his ability to kind of play as a midfielder and a forward at the same time has been really crucial. So I'm with you. This wasn't a great Odegaard game. And it did seem that clash of, well, you got sandwiched, didn't he, at a corner. That did make a difference. But I think at the same time, we should acknowledge that, weirdly, some momentum swings went for us in the first half, but they went against us in the second half.
Well, and this is where like game state matters too, right? Because you get a lead against a team that wants to press and push their lineup. What's the right thing to do? A little more of that jiu-jitsu, right? Okay, keep coming on to us. You get a two-goal lead against a team that wants to press and come on to you, let them press and come on you, because you're going to try to hit them going the other way again. And interestingly, it's so strange, because we'll come on in the second half, but like I think the fight was draining out of them. We had started to get on the ball. We were passing it around. We create the big sack a chance. I mean, they had a few. They had Romero from a corner, right, head on to the post. I think Partey just about gets back to him and like kind of gets his hands in his face a little bit just on time to get that header off target. I think the missed sun chance is a huge one. It's the North London Derby. There's always big chances both ways. And they went for us for sure. But you know, again, to me, when Odegaard is 60 passes per 90 and he completes 18 in this game, just, you know, that is something that jumped out at me. In terms of on the positive side of things, I mean, Clive, like, let's just get into Kai Havertz, because this is the Kai Havertz game for me. So Mikel said he was ill before the game. We all know the Jordan flu game. That's legend. This is the Kai Havertz flu game. I mean, it's not just the goal he scores. It's not just the pass to Bukayo. It's the way he was always available to help break the press, the work he did in tight spaces, the way he was able to win duels, the flicked headers on from long kicks out from Raya. He just did everything. And I think it's the first time I've ever seen him look tired at the end of a game, probably because of the illness. But Clive, we do not win this derby without Kai, is my belief. I think he showed why Mikel thinks he could be a midfielder and why he can be a number nine, both in the same game. He's getting his well-deserved recognition outside of Arsenal circles now. But he was fantastic in this game. Can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah, sometimes the game suits you and sometimes it doesn't. So as you alluded to earlier with the game state, when we got goals, maybe more than we expected, we can bring people onto us. Once they come onto us, we can clip it long. That's mm-hmm. not a build-up game. So what happens? Odegaard gets missed out, right? He becomes somebody that's looking for the second balls, you know? And if you get the second balls, then we build second phase. So still does it, but he's off the ball game was excellent, right? He's on the ball game. We didn't really need him today, on Sunday. We didn't need the same level of build-up quality because we didn't own the ball. We didn't need to own the ball because we owned the game. Right. So, and part of the reason that we are better this year than last year is we have solutions for different game states, and Kai Havertz provides lots of solutions. I know we've had discussions about whether he's a midfielder or whether he's a striker. I don't think it matters really. He's exactly what we need at that particular time. Right. So you go into your toolbox and he can deliver anything you like. He heads balls away on the front post. He double sixes when he needs to. If you watch him take defensive responsibility and he runs deep, right into centre half positions on occasions, and knowing that he can do it, then comes out to cover for somebody else. He obviously can do channel runs, he can run beyond, he can obviously post up and hold up. And, you know, when I was growing up, we used to have a saying called, we pick a team for school break, and we have something called rush goalies. And so, can I be rush goalie? And the goalie would then come out and play, you know, but I'll go and go as long as I can be rush, right? And I thought about this today, and I thought, Havertz is almost like a rush forward, right? He does what he likes, but he works backwards rather than go the other way. So rush goalie or the goalie didn't want to be there and basically ran up front as soon as he had a chance. You know what I mean? Havertz is the other way around. He's like a rush forward that runs backwards to do whatever we need him to do to be available for his teammates. And so, you know, I'm a team guy. So when I see a player like this and his reaction to transition, defensive and attacking and just, you know, something that stood out to me from watching the game today, and it's so clear. This team are so connected to each other that they've swapped jobs so seamlessly. I almost get frustrated when people say, but he's a this, he's a that. No. The whole principles of this team is we are everything that we need to be for that particular phase of the game. Look at Havertz, he epitomizes it the most. I watched Martinelli in this game playing left back, just played left back and did it really, really well. So we need to stop this. We obviously know what they do well on a good day, but can they do stuff on a bad day when we are going through a bad moment to help us see off a team like Spurs to make sure we got a good Monday today and when we pop into work and do all our stuff? And that's what's the most important thing. When we have people who can't do stuff for us, we can't ride out bad moments. That's what you got to worry about. That's when you have real problems. And so there's a moment there, we're building up down left-hand side. Gabriel's pressed. They're pressing him. They're thinking, mate, you ain't got a pass. Havertz drops deeper in the centre mid, right on the semicircle, controls it, flicks it over the defender's head to Odegaard, who flicks it over the attacker's head, and we're out. And I'm thinking, I'm thinking, that's a team player. Recognising the stress of Gabriel, he hasn't got an easy pass on the outside, so I better drop it on the inside, much deeper than I normally do, to take that first phase. And he took it away from Odegaard, and Odegaard then was there for him for his next pass. I'm thinking, I really like this team. I really genuinely like this team, because that's what team play is all about.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved this Kai Havertz performance. And I think it's interesting because at times the criticism of Kai Havertz is that he doesn't show the intensity. He looks lackadaisical. But I think what we're seeing in the pressurized games is that he actually goes about his business in a very methodical and effective way. And sometimes in these very big games, and we've seen it at St. James's Park 2 seasons ago, was it Tottenham Stadium at the time? Yeah, 2 seasons ago, you know, when we couldn't handle the pressure, when it got to us. Sometimes you can be too emotional. I don't want to lean into that trope that was said about Arsenal last season, but there's something to be said about Kai having the right balance. Like, I'll admit there are times I'm like, come on, get excited, get energized. But he goes about his business in a very effective way. And there is that little bit of snarl to him. There's a great gif going around of him just pushing James Maddison off the pitch, basically, like, get out of my way. And you compare the kind of physicality we had in our team. Odegaard, I think, despite the passing, physically very robust and involved. Obviously, Kai, very robust physically. Declan Rice. And then you look at, like, James Maddison and how lightweight he is. And just how easily, to use your word, Clive, boshed out of the game he is, right? Just made a non-factor. And Spurs really, I don't think, could win the physical battles. And that's why when the game came down to it at the end, you know, our Titans at the back, Gabriel, for one, who's probably not getting enough praise in this game, were just able to handle everything. And although we felt nervous, you know, they never really did. I mean, I don't know if they felt nervous. They certainly didn't act that way. There was no panic that I could see. Before we shift gears to the second half, the third goal, the Kai Havertz goal, Tim, there's a few things here. First of all, there's Declan Rice getting a lot of flack from some interesting looking Spurs fans, one of whom I think is a Weird Al Yankovic doppelganger. And then just an awesome
another one rides the bus.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I'm a big Weird Al fan, unironically. So.
Now, he hit some bangers, but like the Rice and Saka both giving it back was great. But like, I love the Ben White of it. So first of all, there's obviously the moment where he messes with Vicario's gloves. Don't know what that's all about. And then, you know, he is tasked with unsettling the keeper, and there's a way to do it where the whistle blows the minute the ball goes in the air, or it gets called back by VAR. And there's a way to do it where you just stand your ground. And I think, you know, like at Porto, for example, we saw he just got called over and over and over and over again by the ref. But the Premier League's a little different. It's the keeper of the defender's job to get a man between White and Vicario. I don't know what Spurs players are doing, but as much as we can praise Nicolas Jover, like, Saka's delivery for the own goal is great. Rice's delivery there is fantastic. It's low. It's flat. It beats the first man. It just needs a touch. That touch is able to happen because Ben White prevents Vicario from coming off his line. It's just great execution from the team. And I think Ben White is becoming one of my favorite players because he's the player you know the opposition is going to absolutely hate. And I love having that hate figure on our team. He is a weird dude. He is. And I love it. I love the way he approaches the dark arts. And it's a big part of why our third goal was able to go in.
Yeah, from Weird Al Yankovic to Weird Ben White. Yeah. The thing about that is as well, yeah, to your point, like, you can't get booked for unfastening the goalkeeper's gloves. Like, what? That's not a foul. You can't, like, what are you going to get booked for that? And that's exactly right. Like, you elbow someone in the ribs, hold their shirt, especially a goalkeeper, yeah, you're going to get a foul given against you. But, you know, like, unfastening the goalkeeper's gloves, like, what are you going to do? And this is where if Spurs were a big club and they were analysed like a big club, a lot of the questions of Ange Postecoglou would be, how did you have 15 days to prepare for a game where your goalkeeper has been bullied all season long from set pieces, and you're playing the team with the biggest bullier of goalkeepers and you do nothing about it. Like that to me, like, listen, I can see, you know, in my objective moments, the good and bad of Ange Postecoglou at Spurs. Mm. That is bad. That is piss poor management and coaching. Incredibly poor. Like, really, yep. That if I were a Spurs fan, I'd be going mad at that. Like, how are you letting the team who've scored the most goals from set pieces this season with the most obvious wind-up merchant of goalkeepers against, alongside James Trafford at Burnley, who, by the way, was dropped largely because he gets bullied so much on set pieces, but he's a kid, really. Like, how are you letting that happen? Like, absolutely unreal. I'm incredibly happy for it, though. And, you know, this is what we're talking about marginal gains earlier. This wins Arsenal the game. It wins Arsenal the game, right? All right, look, Ben White pissing about with the goalkeeper's gloves doesn't directly win us the game, but scoring from those two set pieces wins Arsenal the 3 points. That is the difference. That is the difference between the two teams on the day. And that keeps us in the title race with three games to go. And it's done that many, many times this season. So, you know, awful coaching from Tottenham and everyone involved in that. And actually, like, flipping it to Tottenham for a minute, they did learn some lessons, because against Newcastle, they played Bissouma in midfield. He got run through. So they took him out and put Højbjerg in. Cheers. He scored our first goal. Very nice. They lost Udogie as well. And what was really interesting, they had a couple of selection choices. They lost Udogie at left back. They had a choice between Emerson Royale and Ben Davis. And Ben Davis is basically a centre back. Mm. And Emerson Royale is your guy who can't defend, but will give you something going forward. They went for the centre back. And then they had a choice really between Kulusevski and Brennan Johnson. Kulusevski, very secure on the ball, doesn't rate highly on goals and assists. Brennan Johnson, not as secure in possession, but might make you something. They went for the guy secure in possession. So they showed us respect in that respect. Mm. And they, like, they really did. They made the conservative choices in their team selection, which I'm not, like, if I were a Spurs fan, that's what I would have wanted. But then to do that and then to not work out that Arsenal, you know, might shithouse you from a set piece. Wonderful. I'm really, really glad. And I just wanted to add, sorry, as a coda on the Havertz thing, where Arsenal have developed is we used to ask the left back to play two positions at once, to play in midfield and at left back. We've now graduated to asking our centre forward to be a centre forward and midfielder at the same time. That is much more comfortable, I think, because if and when that doesn't work, and it hasn't, right? We played Brentford. Havertz didn't score till he went back into midfield. Porto weren't concerned about it. Let's be honest, Bayern were all right with it as well. But that's all right. You just bring Gabriel Jesus on, or you put Trossard. Like, there's more ways to cover for being perhaps a little bit ineffective up front. Whereas if your left back pisses it up, you might concede a goal. So I think Arsenal have just changed a hybrid position there into something a bit more comfortable and secure.
Clive?
Yeah, rush. Rush forward, right? That's what it is, right? So, I lost what I was going to say there for a second, but I do think what's clear, Spurs did press us into high moments and it forced us to go long, but we are able to go long. It may cost us.
How good was Bukayo Saka, by the way, at that? I mean, just the way he uses his body to shield off. But Davis is a center back, and he just put him on his hip and turned him.
Brilliant. It's like, for me, one of the games, I think I got mad for me for two games this season. Newcastle away because of the referee conspiracy, he says, allegedly. and Chelsea away, funny enough, because I felt we didn't recognise a game that was an offer. They were pressing us high. Gallagher was having a good moment. They got maximum reward, a dodgy penalty and a dodgy cross. They've got their goals, which Spurs didn't really get early enough. And we were forced to fight back. But what bothered me about that game was it was obvious we had to go longer. Obvious. And we didn't. And when we did, we blew them off the pitch. So where are we now, a few months later on? Spurs are pressing on to us, thinking we're going to get them at home, we'll make a mistake, and we stay calm, we play through them on a few times, and we say, you know what? We got our goal now, let's turn them around. And we went longer. So recognition of the game that's on offer, that's one of my phrases, and that's what I loved about this game. Massively loved that. And sometimes it costs us our skipper, for example, who's not a second ball merchant. He's not someone going to run after flick-ons. The game's going over his head. So he's standing there like Andy Murray watching a tennis match, right? So, but it doesn't matter. You know, he was still there in our 4-4-2 structure. He was still there leading us. And he just didn't have the touches. And a few dodgy touches as well, you know? So, and if you want to look for the development of this team offensively, this game is a sort of game to rewatch because it's quite clear to me we are a right-sided build-up team. And we keep jabbing away. Remember my phrase the other day? Jabbing away at the cut on the right-hand side. Jabbing away. We've got a cut. We're going to keep going there. Our left-hand side needs to be a bit more of a strikery side, a finishing side. We build right, we finish left. So when we think about our wide forward, it's a striker forward. There's someone
just say Marcus Rashford. I'll forgive you. I don't want him, but you might as well just say him.
But it's that style of player. You know, a 6-foot runner that can play centre forward, but can play left, but really is our striker. So he's basically our Salah from the left. We build up just right. That's the guy. Don't make him play centre forward. Say you're going to be our goal scorer, and we're going to do our double 10 in the middle, and we're going to have a forward on the left-hand side. And I think that's the development of this team going forward.
Well, let's be honest. Unfortunately, Martinelli's not in his best form right now because you can see in this game, if Martinelli was at top form, this would not have been a Trossard game. Martinelli would have played this game and it would have been 5 at halftime because there was space to attack that side. Trossard is not slow, but he doesn't have Martinelli's pace. He's not as direct. This wasn't a great Trossard game, but what are you going to say? The guy has just had so many important goals. You can't not pick him. I get why he was picked, and Martinelli hasn't been in his best form. But this is a game where you want that sprinter on that side. And I think that would have made this an even more uncomfortable day for Spurs. We've got to talk second half, the Raya error, how that changes the game, how the game finishes out. The Raya thing is obviously a huge talking point. So let's get to that. But before we get to that, and once again, I am sorry, this far into the pod, and you're screaming for, gagging for, begging for brands. And I have just the brands for you, my friends. And one of them, of course, is Manscaped. I do want to say that, you know, I joke around about Manscaped, but let me just say this, right? I use their products every day. Last night, I used the shaver. I love it. It works great. The thing about Manscaped is they've figured out how to make batteries that last forever. I don't know how they do it, but like, you know, you have the cradle charger. That's nice and all that. But the lawnmower has been sitting in my shower, I feel like, for 3 months. The razor's been sitting on my vanity for like 2.5 months. I haven't plugged them in. I haven't charged them. The batteries just go and go. The shaver is great. It always goes with me on trips because it's so compact and the battery lasts. So I don't need to bring another charger with it. USB-C charger for the shaver, by the way. So really convenient. The lawnmower is wet, dry. Like, we can laugh about shaving our privates and we should laugh about shaving our privates. But at the same time, we all do it. Like, everybody does it. And everybody seems to use these terrible tools. Like, you either can't do it in the shower, so good luck cleaning that up, or you're using a razor that's, who knows when the last time you changed the blade was. Like, the lawnmower has the new foil blade, so you can go completely smooth if that is the look you're going for. It has skin-safe technology. These are just great products. I use them every day. I think they are fantastic. And ultimately, because trimming and shaving is something we do, chest, face, privates, guess what? These are the tools to do it with. So please give them a try. Get 20% off free shipping with code ArsenalVision at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with code ArsenalVision at manscaped.com. And then the line here says, for the best your boys have ever looked, trust Manscaped. So there you go. I would say probably the brand that I get asked about most is NordVPN. Everybody's waking up to the fact that you need a VPN so you can sign up for streaming services in other locations where the prices are lower. Did you know you could do that? You can. Where you can watch things that are geo-locked. I can't tell you how many times I'm on Twitter and someone's like, oh, this video is amazing. And then I go, and it's like, not available in your area. Well, it is when I click on Nord. One-touch app for Mac, for PC, for iPads and iPhones and Android phones. Stream from whatever location you need so you can watch whatever you need to watch. When I'm in the UK and I want to watch those 3 p.m. kickoffs, I just beam back to the US and watch my Peacock subscription or whatever the case may be. So really, really easy to use, really effective. They also have threat protection to keep all the bad stuff off your computer. If, God forbid, you're watching a dodgy stream, who would do that? not me for sure. Some people might. So you're going to want to use NordVPN. And NordVPN has a phenomenal value right now. It is nordvpn.com/ArsenalVision. That's nordvpn.com/ArsenalVision. You get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 4 bonus months free. That's pretty good. 4 free bonus months and 30-day money-back guarantee. So you can just use up the bonus months. And if you don't love it, you can cancel. No hard feelings. Get your exclusive NordVPN deal. nordvpn.com/ArsenalVision. Try it now, risk-free for 30 days. Last but not least, this podcast is sponsored by Unified. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, hey, what do they mean by that? We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery, top-notch performance. That's why Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Arsenal Vision podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by the Energy Enhancement System. If you haven't heard of the EE system yet, you want to listen up. The technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the U.S. or hundreds of other locations around the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing this technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/ArsenalVision to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/ArsenalVision. Here we go. My time to shine. No material testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system. Glad? Is that enough of that?
Indeed.
Got it. Okay, so... Clive, the second half, just before we get to the riot era, I want to say one thing. I felt that we came out of halftime and looked like Arsenal. We're passing the ball around. I felt like we probably had our best sort of period of the game in possession. Tomiyasu has that header early in the second half. And then Saka has a big, big chance from a Kai chipped up cross. Who played Kai in? I can't remember who played Kai in, but Kai gets in down the line. He chips it up to Saka. It's really well saved by Vicario. We were looking better in that second half, and we looked like we had our foot on the ball. And, it felt like there were a million hours left of the game when they got their first goal, but it was already 64 minutes in, and frankly, they had 2 shots, okay? And one of them was like a really speculative Pedro Porro shot from nowhere. We had it under control, didn't we? This felt like a game... that the fight had gone out of Spurs before the riot era.
Yeah, we did have it in control. We were building up as we liked. We could build up through Thomas Partey and Declan Rice when we wanted to. So we played more of a double pivot in this game rather than one up further up. And our fullbacks went high and wide in the first phase. And so we were definitely making sure we controlled the middle because Spurs want to control the middle, rest the game in there and try to steal it and come back on us. So we were a bit cute in the middle. We rat-a-tatted it a couple of times to pull them in and clipped it. And so I really liked how we worked them out nicely. And you're right, Elliot. I think we said yesterday, didn't we, on the IR, in some ways I felt we were better second half than first half, and we lost the second half 2-0, right? So first half we were more adult and efficient and more prepared, And that's why we got our goals. But, for the overall play and our general play, we were just okay. We weren't 3-0 okay. We were just okay, but we managed the moments they gave us really, really well. And so, yeah, I felt really, really comfortable in the first part of the game. And hence why I suppose when the Ryan mistake came, it hit us all hard. Because we're like literally phoning restaurants to go out and have a good night and making plans. And suddenly that it hit us hard. It was like a, they haven't earned that, not at that period. They maybe earned it in the first 50 minutes of the first half, but not then. They didn't earn that, and it came, we sort of did it to ourselves, and I don't even want me to go into the Rayo mistake, but it looks clear to me he forced him to his left foot. Romero was playing rush centre-back, do what you like, player, and I could see that Spurs were really pushing in on Thomas Partey. And so could Raya. And I think he was going to dink it to him and realise, oh my God, if I pass it to him, he's going to get robbed. And so he sort of tried to change his mind and ended up clipping it short. That's how I saw it. People can disagree with me or not. Clipped it short and then, I'm not sure if his one-on-one skills were great, if I'm honest with you, Elliot. He sort of fell down to the right on like a sack of potatoes. And then he slided it. And I think it was such a self-inflicted moment that for me, it was almost 1.5 goals, if that makes sense. Because it's there. And we know they were literally 5 minutes away from heading off to Tottenham Hale. Do you know what I mean? They were literally that close to emptying that stadium, and we just gave them life. We gave them life, and we all knew. You don't need to be an Arsenal expert. We know what they're like. If they can snatch any glory at all, they would do everything in their power to get it. And we sort of knew what was coming. But even within that emotional state we're all in, I still felt we controlled it, played well in those periods. And there wasn't a lot of incidents apart from one we created ourselves. You know, that's my feeling in it.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that I think about this second half is it just shows you the psychology of football and how pressurized the game is. And I found myself, when we were going into halftime, we had a 3-goal lead. And I found myself saying, we just got to get to halftime at 3-0. You know, like, we just got to get to halftime at 3-0. But I looked, and the reason is Son had a big chance on 45. Pedro Porro had a chance on 45 plus 4. Brennan Johnson had a chance of 45 plus 6. Brennan Johnson had another chance of 45 plus 6. And, you know, you just knew, even at 3-0, there's a chance that if the crowd can come back into it, with everything we have riding on it, and them having had 15 days of rest and us being wiped out, that it could get nervy. Clive?
Yeah, just one thing was on my mind, and I forgot it earlier on, but Spurs made a mistake. They didn't pick the right team against us. They should have gone athletic. They should have gone quicker. Papi Sarr, Bissouma, Johnson, if they start, that sort of mirrors a little bit what Chelsea had, quite an athletic team. We beat them 5, but it was a period when their athleticism caused us a problem, you know, on transitions. And I think we had the same team to manage that transition type game, but they weren't athletic enough. And for a team that shows their leg to you, you better be athletic. You can't just have Van de Ven doing everything. You know what I mean? And so you need to be athletic to cover those spaces in midfield and in defence. And they didn't pick those players. And that maybe could have helped them stave off a three-niller. But then we're back to the details again, aren't we? It don't matter if you can run, if you're dumb and you stand in the wrong places and you don't protect your goalkeeper and you let people run goal side of you and you have no plan to get robust with people. It doesn't matter if you're good athletes. But they ended with a team which was stronger for me than the one that started, even though it didn't create any stress or trauma for us.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the moment. And there's just no way around it, Tim. It changes the game and it's terrible. I was beside myself when it happened because I kind of thought that we were getting our hands around their throats in the second half. We could have a historic humiliation on our hands. And I said this at the top of the pod. I understand wanting a 3-0, a 4-0, a 5-0, wanting the real humiliation. And it looked like that was on, which is what made the error so galling. And on the error, Mikel says, it's part of football. I don't like the principles we applied at that moment. And after that, it can happen. You misjudge the situation. You try to make the pass and you don't, and you have doubts. And he did say it's part of football. But what I loved is that David picked up Gabriel Magalhaes, who is quite heavy. Then he was sensational for the last 20 to 25 minutes of the game. That is what I love about the players. I really think Raya had a brain fart. I think Partey shows for the pass. Raya thinks, I'll play it in behind Romero, who's just buccaneering forward for no reason. And Raya kind of realizes it's not on. And then neither here nor there kind of plays the pass without real authority. He's like, should I boot it? Should I pass it? And he doesn't really do either. And Romero gets it and slots it. And it's just a terrible error. Your thoughts on how it played out?
Yeah, he clearly just gets caught in two minds. And I think a little bit of that is game state as well. I'm sure if it's 0-0 or 1-0, he just goes with his first idea. It's a slight switch off. I guess the thing is as well, when teams ask their goalkeepers to do stuff like this, probably once or twice a season, they're going to get it wrong. I mean, the thing is, like, Raya he's made very, like, this was an uncharacteristic Raya error for me. Like, the one in Lons, that to me is barely even an, well, it is an error, but you know what I mean? Like the way it was punished was severe. And even against Bayern, when he'd suddenly, you know, I sit like near the edge of the center circle. So it's quite striking when the goalkeeper comes into my peripheral vision when we're supposed to be defending. I'm like, what?
I'm still not over it, Tim. I'm not over it.
Why is there, was he wearing green or blue that day? I can't remember, but it was a very different colored shirt.
Blue, and
I was
like, I remember it. Blue.
Yeah. Because I was like, why is that come into my peripheral vision? Like, what's he doing there? But even there, like Bayern, like bang, three touches, done. This one was obviously like a much more obvious kind of error. And yeah, I think it probably doesn't happen or nil or 1-0. I'm not saying like he'd completely knocked off. I do think it's kind of natural, but he got caught in two minds. I do think Clive's point about Romero stepping onto Partey is, don't get me wrong, like maybe that's giving Romero too much credit and he did just go a bit rogue. I think it also speaks to the fact that Spurs don't have a central midfield at all. All their central midfielders are a bit rubbish, really. And I'm sure that in the next 2 to 3 years, almost none of them will be there. So he kind of has to step on. And I think there's a bit of risk reward in playing Thomas Partey over Jorginho. We score 8 goals this week with Partey playing, and I think that's probably connected. But we looked a little bit ropey in transition in both games, and I think that's probably connected as well. There's a risk-reward there. Obviously, this goal isn't his fault. But
I think some people, Tim, would sum it up by saying we looked more last season's Arsenal in the last 2 games than this season's Arsenal in some ways.
Yeah. I think that's kind of fair enough. But... like obviously this is on Raya, this one, I guess you'd say.
It's fully on Raya. Yeah. I mean, it's fully on Raya. And like you can't blame anyone else for where they are. If you take a freeze frame of what happens, it's really interesting, right? So Partey comes streaming back to give him an option. Saliba's out wide for an option. Gabriel's sort of on the slant just outside of the box, he's an option. Romero, and this is the thing, you can see it in Romero, right? They're 3-0 down. He's doing the Christian Romero, I'm just going to run around and look like I'm trying thing. He has no business being there. He has run from the halfway line up to our box. If Raya goes long and Havertz wins a first ball or something, we're in. It's a terrible decision by Romero. And he chases Gabriel and then decides to stop the chase. And I think what screws up Raya, if you look at his windup, he winds up to go big. Mm. And he sees Romero shading to go follow Gabriel. He's like, oh, party's open. But Romero gives up the chase, and because he gives up the chase, he's now right in position to pick the pass off. It's terrible from Raya. He should just go big. Romero's all the way up the pitch. That's the play. It's just, it's the wrong decision in the wrong moment. And it is so galling, not because of the decision, but because there was nothing in the game at that moment. If in the first half, you could say, even at 3-0, we felt pressurized. It did not feel pressurized in this moment.
No,
you know?
It is a game statey kind of error, though, because we see what Raya does after that, and he goes...
We'll come on to that. Yep.
Yeah, he goes back to normal, right?
It's as like, Mikel said, yep.
Yeah, it's like, we're not 3-0 up anymore, we're 3-1. And all of a sudden, we're the team that's played 300 times since Tottenham last played. And, you know, all of those factors come back into it. And you can see he kind of, like I say, I don't think it's as simple as, oh, we were 3-0 up and he was messing about. It was just, I don't think he does that at 0-0 or 1-0. And it lets Tottenham back in at a time where they have no business being back in. And actually, I think Romero's chaoticness, as you kind of described, does contribute to that, because it reminds me of that Henry Winter line. No, it wasn't Henry Winter. It's Jonathan Wilson, who was writing about Man United, kind of saying that, like, they let you through so often that actually players aren't coached in what to do when you've got loads of time and space, and it almost freaks them out. And I think it's kind of the same with Romero here. Like, everything's so positional and structured nowadays that some madman just running at you probably does put you off, because it's not something you often see at this level.
Yeah. Clive?
On what?
Well, just on the error, the moment, the way it happens, and
it's not planned. It's not planned. It's not part of their plan. This is just a player running forward at 3-0 down, just trying to show effort to the crowd. And that was it. There's nothing else behind it. And our goalkeeper chose or just changed his mind, really, on his weak foot. If he's on his right foot, I think he'd just gone bigger. And that's it. There's nothing more to see. They got maximum reward out of it. And then that opened the door. And I think the impact, because it was so dumb, the impact on all of us was greater than what they actually had. We tried to calm down. We did calm down until the penalty came along. And so, yeah, I just think that's the major thing. I think how we built up in this game, I thought was really, really good. I thought the double pivot worked really, really well. And I have to disagree with Tim on the transition side of things. I don't think it was a massively transition game from a Spurs point of view. I think it was a pressing game. Our ability to exit was key. And our ability to keep it from first two passes once we've won it to create transitions of our own was what gave us a false, you know, gave us authority within the game where we didn't control possession. The key thing when you're playing against a pressing team is to make sure when you win it, you can keep it for the first two and then expand. And that's key. And that's where Rice has really improved this season, massively got better. And Thomas Partey, we know that's his game. Thomas Partey's weakness is when he's too aggressive to keep it. And I think particularly in the Chelsea game, he was quite conservative with some of his passing going backwards. And in this game, he's equally conservative. He got robbed once and then immediately got back, but he took him to the cleaners a couple of times and was just really, really good. Match of Day 2 did a fantastic analysis on Partey and Rice, which I thought was really instructive and quite clever and nuanced of them to actually do that, because I think that's the key. Spurs want that space. And so Rice wasn't playing left eight in this game. He's a lot more conservative because they knew they wanted that space. And they knew if there was a turnover there, they wanted to support each other. They did that really, really well. So that's the first time I've seen them partner up as double sixes. And yeah, the game state may have controlled a little bit of that. But yeah, each game is different. And two of the best transition teams, pressing teams in Chelsea and Spurs, I think we had the best two centre mids for that game. It may not be the right one for Bournemouth. It'll definitely be the right one for Manchester United, I'll tell you that for nothing. But Bournemouth at home, I'd probably want to see a change, if I'm honest with you, to make sure we can slice them open. But for this game and for the Chelsea game, I thought they were really, really good.
I thought Partey was really good in this game. I just want to say, like, because I know that he came in for some criticism early in the game, right at the very start. He tried to take it on the half turn and got it taken from him. And I think, like, this is the problem with event-based analysis. And I think this creeps into some of the analysis of, like, our left-back situation as well. When you use players whose principal quality is their no-touch turn, their tight space ability, their ability to play progressive passes under pressure, their press resistance, and then evaluate them on whether they ever lose the ball, you're doing a bad job analyzing the game. You can't simultaneously say you want press-resistant, progressive players in key parts of the middle of the pitch and then say you want them to never give the ball away. You want them to never give the ball away? You play Mohamed Elneny. He never gives the ball away. He can wall pass it to the center back with the best of them. But we know you can't win that way. So, you know, Tim, well, Clive, let me go back to you just for a second. Now, Tim, I'll let you in on this. Clive, I just think you have to have these players who are willing to do the hard thing in the hard situations, but you also have to acknowledge that when you do the hard thing in the hard situations, like a keeper, for example, if your expectation is 100% success, you've got the wrong analytical framework.
It's always the next thing that happens. You know, fullback's going to get beat, centre mids are going to lose it, centre backs are going to get caught under the ball. Gabriel got caught under the ball. Siba got around just in time before the ball could drop for Son's shot. And that's why it went over the bar, because Son had to take it early. If you wait another second, it would have gone. Right? So, and that's why he missed it. And then you have to look at it. So if I'm the coach of Spurs, I'm saying, let's try to get after Partey, because they're gonna give it to him, because Declan Rice is not as good as progressing. Let's get after him. The Partey says, yeah, give it to me. I'll keep it. I'll do a bounce pass, so we'll get through. And if they don't come and press me, I'll give it to Saka. Who was man of the match in this game alongside Havertz? Saka. I haven't seen the passing combinations yet, but Thomas Partey would have been a big part of feeding that ball out to the right-hand side quickly, so where I stayed against a fullback who hasn't really played a lot of games this year, who was blowing out of his backside and didn't last the whole game, because basically he got run stupid because they couldn't cut off the service into Saka. And that's why you have to look at the overall game model and say, did that work? yeah, it really worked. We should have gone forward and up, and then we could have just sat there and got the sombreros out, right? So yeah. So it's a tough one. It is a tough one, but we're all getting better at this, aren't we? We're all learning as we go, the analysis side of things and what to focus on. But yeah, that's how I saw it, mate, to be honest.
Tim, you wanted to come back on that.
Yeah, sure. So I think on Partey, you're right. There's a couple of times in the first few minutes where Spurs catch us. They catch Partey once. Trossard has that slip in the area and they're really, really coming on to us. And I watched Match of the Day 2 last night as well. Of course I did. We beat Tottenham. So of course I'm going to watch.
We watch everything then, don't we? Every single program. I've watched every YouTube channel.
But I think it's in like the ninth minute where Partey turns away from someone, and that's the first time we really get away from the press. And MOTD2 analysed this as well. We go up the pitch and then Tottenham clear across and Partey's on it and he wins a free kick. And that was really the first, like we were suffering, I think, in that first 8-9 minutes under the pressure. But that was the first time I think we showed them, okay, but if you better get your press right every single time, because if you get it wrong once, we'll get away from you. That's what happened with the second goal as well. Like Tottenham are crowding around Saka, they're crowding around Havertz, like Saka in the first phase, but then we get two passes right and bang, in on goal. And that was where a lot of the game was. And I kind of just wanted to say in closing on that, because I don't think we really talked about the lineup. You know, we often talk about game for your life, Champions League final tomorrow. I think what we saw in this game is if the Champions League final is tomorrow and everyone is fit and available, Tomiyasu plays and Partey plays. I think you can see that in Arteta's thinking because they both played both games this week.
Timber notwithstanding, obviously.
But we can also, I can also see a future without both of those players, if that makes sense. Or where that's not, where Tim, you're, but that's fine, isn't it? That's where we are right now. That's right now in our evolution of where we are right now. But there's a future beyond that, which is exciting, isn't it? It's exciting to see how we develop next.
Well, and we know the future on the left might be Timber. We think that may be the plan. But in terms of your party point, I would simply say this. Whatever your evaluation of him as a player, and I do think on his day, in form, he is still one of the best central midfielders around, and you can win big things with that player. I just think it is a fool's errand chasing seasons from players who have shown you they can't give you seasons. Why would you do it again? I get it. We like how he looked against Chelsea, and we like how he looked against Spurs, and you start to see the vision again. Why would you chase this again? When you've been proven time and time and time again, you're going to spend the season saying what could have been if the player was fit. We insulated ourselves from it a bit with Jorginho. We insulated ourselves from it a lot with Declan Rice. But for the love of God, let's stop hoping for players to be available, like Tomiyasu, like Partey, and let's start planning on players to be available.
Do you not think we've done that, though, this season? Because on one hand, Jesus is injured and buggered, mate, absolutely buggered. And it's not a problem because Havertz can play there. Zinchenko's on the naughty step. No problem, because we've got two other guys that can play left back. Like, I do think by having, like, versatile players, we've managed, to Clive's point, it's not a forever solution, but it's like we've managed to make these things. Like, if you'd have told us in November 2022 Jesus and Zinchenko are going to be like unused subs in a North London derby, you wouldn't have believed. But we've made those things less of an issue.
Clive, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, mate, you know me and first 11 discussions. Keep your mind open. Keep your mind open to evolution. Keep your mind open to the very thing that Spurs didn't do, which was watch our last few games and try to have a plan for us. Do you see what I mean? Bayern Munich prepared for us properly. Say Aston Villa. They really did focus on us. Villa maybe got more than they deserve, but Bayern Munich, you know, they really, really looked at us and prepared for us. And so the discussions we're having today about Havertz here and Jesus not playing, the game may come back to Jesus at some point when they shut him down. You know, who'd have thought Kivior would have played the amount of games he played in 2024? None of us did. You know, the game came to him. We found a solution until somebody picked on him. You know, then we put him down for, he's a young player, we put him down for a bit. I watch him come on in the last 8 minutes of that game, and he's not coming on like a young player anymore. He's shouting at people, he's pointing at people, he's telling people where to stand. We're boxing up the centre of our defence, literally, Elliot, five of them in the line, no more than covering 7 or 8 yards, it felt like. What does that make you do? Well, can't get through them. So I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll cross it over them. And when we cross it over them, who's there? Our goalkeeper, who loves crosses. I mean, I love watching the synergy of this group. I also keep my mind open to influence of others, growing influence and decreasing influence. Keep your mind open on that first 11. Just don't get pinned by it. There's a core group. The rest are very much interchangeable.
So before we move off the Raya thing and finish the pod, I just want to say this. David Raya made a terrible mistake. I do not regard goalkeeper as an issue for us, and I do not regard goalkeeper as a position we need to address. David Raya is good enough for us to win the things we want to win. I think he is an adequate shot stopper. He has shown over the course of his career that his shot stopping numbers are good. I wouldn't say they're at the Allison level of outrageously good, but they are good. And by the way, they're better than what Ramsdale's were. I will say that I think he is very good with his feet. Okay. But one of the things that he excels at, you guys, and we absolutely have to talk about this before we move on, is claiming crosses, the way he commands his area. For a guy who's not that big, by the way. So first of all, I think we know we rely on him for comfort and control in games. The extent to which he steps outside of his penalty area and the defenders and midfielders go back to him in positions where you're very exposed, he's very comfortable. He does not tend to make mistakes. He made a big mistake here, but he doesn't tend to do it. But think about this for a second. You need a shot stopper at Arsenal? No, you don't, because Arsenal concede the fewest shots in the league. What you need is a guy who can play the ball with his feet and who can claim crosses. So here's the data, because the data is what matters, right? The data tells you what matters, at least in this respect. He is the number one claimer of crosses in the Premier League for keepers in terms of cross claim percentage. Okay. And that's not by a little, that's by quite a bit. I think that is so, so important because that's where we could potentially be vulnerable. Vulnerable, right? Set pieces, free kicks. Tim, you and I lived through the Almunia era. I mean, Sam Allardyce loved nothing more than seeing Almunia standing in his box, right? That we love to ship goals to Blackburn and Bolton and teams like that. Ospina standing behind the line. Arsenal don't concede a lot of shots. But if you're weak on crosses, if the opposition can just put it in the mixer, right? That's where you can wind up conceding from situations that your football plan shouldn't cause you to concede from. And Raya being the top in cross claiming percentage in the Premier League is really important. And for the record, Ramsdale, for those asking, I think he was like 16th last season, I think, in that percentage. The way Raya finished this game deserves a lot of credit because the only threat we came under was balls in the box, and he went up high points the ball and claims a lot of balls, goes to the ground, takes a few seconds, kills off the stress and anxiety for a player who made a big mistake to bring them back in the game. And by the way, at 3-1, you don't have to get it to 3-2. I think Rice makes a mistake in the box too, right? Lets it drop, kicks the guy in the balls. It's funny now in retrospect. But I think the cross-claiming is a big part of Raya's appeal. And I think we should appreciate that instead of looking at the handful of mistakes he's made over the course of an entire season, because that cross-claiming is very important and was important in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's shot suppression, right? You can have all the talent in the world, but if someone's taller than you in the penalty area, they might win the header, right? Mm. You look at when you go to FA Cup third round and you're away at Shrewsbury or something, what are they going to do? I don't watch Shrewsbury. I might be doing them a massive disservice here. They're probably going to throw the ball in the box against you. Why are they going to do that? Because it's an equaliser of talent, right? So if you've got a guy who reduces that jeopardy, you absolutely take that. And you're right. Like, it's not, I mean, yeah, Ramsdale, like you say, was about 16th in that metric. But actually, when you look at it, everyone's quite bunched together. There's like single decimal points, but like most of them are in around the 6% range. And Raya's like in 12%. And that is so valuable. That is unbelievably valuable, and not just a new reference in this game. We were 3-2 up away from home off the back of 300 games in 4 days. We needed him to take the ball, to take the sting out of the game, to go down, to hold on to it. But there's another side to that as well that we see, which is sometimes it's 0-0 and the goalkeeper takes the ball just as the other team are attacking. That's the one time they're disorganized and he can get rid of it and really, really roll it out and get us going and get us on the counter-attack. So there's two attacking sides to that, as well as the very, very key defensive side. And, you know, you look at things, we were having a conversation in October or November about his positioning at crosses and whether he's too over to the front post. We probably got done at Newcastle on that. We got done at Chelsea where Mudryk accidentally, you know, like a little mole pops up in the ground and Mudryk does like a lap of honour because he really meant this and his coaches told him to shin it into the top corner from 40 yards. Of course they did, mate. But, you know, that's not an issue anymore, is it? Like, that's clearly that's been corrected because we haven't talked about it since. And yeah, and also I guess what I'd say about that as well is like a lot of people haven't noticed it. It's one of those things that washes over you. And the reason it washes over you is because that's a high risk reward thing, right? Coming out a lot, leaving your line a lot. But he gets it right most of the time. That's why you haven't noticed it, because he doesn't fumble many. He's not like coming out and, you know, a bit like, you know, Arshavin was your risk reward player, right? And everyone got annoyed with him because he did give the ball away about 40% of the time. So you notice it, but it washes over you when a player basically gets their decision making right on that. And especially considering, like you said, he's not the biggest goalkeeper you've ever seen. So for him to, you know, to get those arms up, and it's quite brave as well, actually, because one of the reasons goalkeepers are protected is because when you go up with your arms up, your ribs and your torso are completely exposed. Mm. So someone throws their elbow in, you got a broken rib. And there was a good thread on Twitter this week about, like, Raya had had facial reconstruction surgery, basically, when he was at Blackburn for getting one in the face. So, like, mm-hmm. It's quite brave to do that as well. So, yeah, that has to be. That and his quality of distribution are the two major factors about why he's come in. Because I think, honestly, if a shot was coming in on goal, I don't see much difference between Raya and Ramsdale. In fact, I think Ramsdale might be better if someone's smashing the ball in the top corner from 20 yards. But goalkeeping, it's a 90-minute game and there's a lot of other actions.
Yeah, and this is the thing. I get it. In these pressurized games, when someone makes a mistake that costs you, I totally understand being outraged. I wanted Raya fired out of a cannon into the sun in that moment, right? But I think in the cold light of day, you just have to look at the totality of the contribution. It's really interesting, right? What happened in the home derby? Jorginho, a player people weren't sure about, who came from Chelsea, who people weren't sure they loved, made the error that cost us the points. And get this Chelsea reject out of my club. He should never start for us again. Jorginho has been a key part of a great season at a critical time of the season. It is just the reality that sometimes you have these players that people aren't necessarily sold on to begin with, and they make an error in a moment that's really pressurized and emotional, and the emotion spills out, and I get that. But I just think overall, he is a player we can win with. I don't think there's a conversation to be had at that position. I would be disappointed if we certainly look to do anything different there. We have other fish to fry. I'm ready to just go big picture here as a wrap-up, Clive, unless you want a final word on Raya.
No. I think I just want to say something, because you mentioned a few players there that you just got me thinking about the bench. And so obviously we've been soaking up all the content. And I'm looking at people who had their coats on that didn't play. Jorginho, Smith Rowe, Eddie. I'm looking at them, you know, Zinchenko, and the joy on their faces. Right? They could all be sulking. If I've missed a sulking picture, I put my hand up. I haven't seen one. Those guys all look like they are totally aligned to what they want to achieve. And at this moment in time, some of them are in coats and some of them are playing, and it's okay, because most of them have played during this season and had their periods. And there seems to be an acceptance of where we are. And they all know that the game model could change and they could have a part to play. And when that part comes, they need to be on tip-top. But I just thought the overall connection between the players, it just stood out to me today. So I just wanted to say that again.
And when the big story this weekend is Mo Salah walking through the mix zone, who famously never says anything, saying, if I speak, there will be fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, by the way, Vicario's gotten a lot of good press for being a very good keeper for Tottenham, but he is 14th in cross claiming. And Spurs aren't very good against set pieces, are they, defensively? The good teams don't concede a lot of shots. You know who else isn't very good at claiming crosses? Alisson. And Liverpool, they look a little vulnerable at times from those positions, don't they? So for a team like us that concedes so few shots, having a keeper that claims so many crosses, I think is a bonus. And it's one that we should, you know, maybe just keep in perspective. We won the game after all. Because we won the game, Clive, we sit top of the table. We're now just hoping for some drop points from City, but we have to focus on doing our job. We are 20 points above Spurs. We are in a wonderful position. Since the new year, we are on a 101 point pace. And it's still, think about this. We were top at Christmas. We lost two games. We've been on a 101 point pace since. And it's still not enough to put the title in our own hands. We'll need some help. It really puts in perspective how City can break your brain, because you drop any points at all and suddenly it's manager out, or how do we change the club? We're doing so, so well. This is two seasons in a row. We've gotten a long stretch of the season over 100-point pace. Just a final thought on where we are now and feeling in touching distance of the big accomplishment, but knowing it's not quite in our hands.
Yeah, I think we're getting better at this. And I say the collective we. I think the players are, they look better, they look more comfortable in the moments of pressure. And I think the fans are getting better at it. You know, I think we're getting better at saying what we're seeing. You know, the people in my life anyway, they're getting better at assessing what they're seeing and really understanding the journey that we're on. Hey, look, we're playing against this massive team, maybe not as a club historically, but from a team that's been put together with the executives off the pitch and on the pitch, and there. Recent historic finances allowed them to build this machine of, you know, 12 global clubs, et cetera, et cetera. And so we are where we are. And so, yeah, let's just keep going, because none of us can predict the future, but I just have this feeling that we're starting to really get people's respect by how we're playing. People that didn't previously respect us. And if you know anything about this club, they ain't going to rest their laurels in the summer. We're going to go again and be ruthless again. And we've shown that we can do that. And so whatever's happening in the next 2 years, whether it's this year, whether it's next year or the year after, I think we're going to be fine. Just got to keep with it and stay together.
Yep. And next up is Bournemouth. And we do get a week, or, you know, just about a week to prepare for that. We have the early kickoff. So once again, you know, we have a chance to set the pace. They are good. I saw a really interesting stat. I'll just mention this quickly because this surprised me. I don't think I knew this. There's a lot of things I don't know, but this in particular. Since November 1st, Bournemouth have accrued the fifth most points in the league. Arsenal, City, Liverpool, Villa, Bournemouth. 42 points. Now, it's with a 5-goal difference, so bear in mind, you know, that's something. But that's a good team. And if you want to say trap game with United after that one and after the derby, that would be the one. Can't take your eye off the prize there. We'll have a whole week to build up to it and get excited for it and set the pace and hope that City just show a little wobble under the pressure. Ederson, I think, is injured. His arm was in a sling after the Forest game. Maybe they let in a cheap one. You never know in football. So we live in hope. But an incredible run that we're on. Back-to-back London derbies, won comfortably, confidently. Only Spurs fans thought they were in it. And by the way, don't worry about the refereeing banter. I mean, Spurs fans are going to find ways to try to talk themselves into being in that game. Arsenal were the better team. We won the game. You know, that's how I view it. And derbies are always weird. Look, Liverpool just lost to a much poorer Everton team, okay, in a derby that they hadn't lost in, what was it, 13 years? So anything can happen in a derby. And for us to be 3-0 up and in a position to make a few mistakes and still win it, huge congrats. Love the celebrations at full time. I think we should continue to celebrate all week long and loudly and proudly as we sit top of the table. And we just see what happens with City. We'll leave it there. We will have plenty on this and more this week. I think this week would be a good time for us over on Patreon to maybe do our power rankings again. The recap will be back. We'll have a main pod on Thursday and on we go. So join us anywhere you want. We're just happy to have you aboard. Can't wait to see people for the last weekend of the season. Tim's on Twitter at Stillmanair. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
Clive's on Twitter at ClivePFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
My name is Alex Smithy, Blackman's Twitter again. Gunner, we love you. And we'll talk to you after Arsenal 10, Bournemouth 0.